So, hi Michelle, how have you been?
I've been good. How about you?
Pretty good. I had to restart this podcast because you had the wrong microphone, but
I
other
did. It's been so long, Mike, since we podcast that I had to reinstall Skype. Skype had completely uninstalled because it needed to update. So I had to reinstall it and all that. So it's been a while.
So, Michelle, what did you want to talk about today?
And I don't know what groceries. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I'm just kidding because I actually prompted this podcast. I have a bunch of people asking me why we don't podcast anymore. And it's just because we're in between these shows that are taking so long to reboot that there's no shows on.
Well, true, but I'm kind of with the people because we need to find something new.
Well, I thought we could do just an update about what's coming up and when our shows will be back on. And in the meantime, we could do a little bit of Big Little Lies. Because Big Little Lies is a pretty cool show. We both seem to like it.
Yeah, I really do like it. Now, let me ask you a question about it because I didn't know. I am watching it right now, season two on HBO Go. Does it come out one episode at a time, or is HBO Go, is the stuff released like Netflix releases stuff? Do you
No, it
know?
comes out one at a time.
Okay.
So,
I
how
wasn't
far
sure.
along are you in it?
I think I finished episode five last night of season two, so
Okay,
a
so
little
there's,
ways.
I think there's seven and seven, seven in each season.
Okay.
So, they just did episode six last night, and there's one left
Okay.
of the second season. But before we get into that, so let's just talk about what our shows are. So there's only four shows that I could figure out that are potentially coming back on. Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Better Call Saul won't be back on until 2020 sometime. It started
Yeah.
in different times of the year, but it's usually in the beginning part of the year, like January, February. So look for that this winter, I guess, sometime. The Affair, though, The Affair's coming up next month, August 25th. Although I don't know what's going to be left of The Affair, Michelle. There's nobody left on the show.
Yeah, I don't know if I understand that one. I don't know what, we're gonna do with that one.
What's her?
Allison
Allison's
died.
gone. Allison's husband's going to be gone. What's Noah's wife's name?
Helen.
Helen's still around, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think she's the only one left, though, isn't she? Because I thought Noah was leaving too. I could be wrong.
Well, Helen's hard to make fun of. I like making fun of Noah. It's easy to make fun of Allison and her husband and their whole
Cole, yeah.
family. But I don't know. So that's coming up August 25th. I guess we'll see how that goes.
Yeah,
Okay,
we'll see.
Fargo is
And
filming in November and airing in 2020 sometime.
yeah, that's what they said. They said that they couldn't get it, that because of the nature of the show and because it's Fargo, that they have to film it in the winter time, and so then it won't be out, until the next winter time. And so that's one of the limitations of that show and why. Did you read about it and what they're gonna
No,
do
I just
this
looked at
time
the
and
dates
everything?
it's supposed to be. There's somebody who's coming up, Chris Rock or somebody famous is on.
Yeah, Chris Rock is what I read, which was kind of cool. Yeah, they said that it was going to be something about like a black community and a white community, and how they had to swap eldest sons in order to like gain trust or something. I don't know. I'm way wildly paraphrasing,
Kind of like
but
a Theon Greyjoy thing. You got to go mentor with your enemy's parents to so
yeah,
they know
I
you
don't
have to stay
know.
in line if they have your son.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting that you talked about it with that though. So something odd like that. It's going to be I think I read though that, Chris Rock is like the father, not the son, which I guess he wouldn't be at this age unless it's, I don't know. Anyway, it sounds really interesting to me.
And then True Detective, anywhere from 2020 to 2023, if ever.
Yeah.
So, And I'm still hoping for a remake of The Slap. I don't know if that's going to come through for me, Michelle. Not even a remake. I want the original people back on.
Well, it'd be kind of hard to do that with the little boy now because he'd be like old enough to be a boxer or something, fight you back.
Yep. So anyway, so that's it for our schedule. Hopefully we'll be able to fill in more and more as we know more and more after August 25th when we start doing The Affair.
Yeah.
And some more regular entries into the podcast world.
Yeah, because things are really winding down.
So, Michelle, Big Little Lies. Big Little Lies is essentially it's a murder mystery. But first, I thought it would be fun to make some basic observations about the show. Michelle, have you ever been to the Monterey Peninsula where it's filmed?
I have not.
Have you ever wanted to see it?
Oh, you know what? I actually watch the intro to this every time because of the scenery and stuff. It is beautiful. So, yes, I would love to see that.
So there's some things about that scenery that are kind of tricky, like that bridge they always show. That's the Bixby Bridge. It's not really in Monterey. It's 20 miles from Monterey. It's in Big Sur, south of Monterey, down the coast. Okay. And there was a their Highway 1 goes all the way up and down the California coast. It's a really beautiful road to drive up and down. But there was a landslide. There's always landslides that close it. But there's one landslide that closed it for like 2 years. You couldn't go on Highway 1 from San Francisco down to L.A. You had to go inland a bunch of ways and go around it. And so you couldn't get to the beautiful scenery for like 2 years. But they just reopened it. I haven't been on it since they reopened it, but I want to do that soon. Just take that drive again.
How long ago was that?
2 years.
Oh, okay. And it was closed for 2 years prior to that.
Yeah, that's a good question. When did it reopen? Yeah. I don't know. Just not too long ago. It's been closed for 2 years and it just reopened like few months ago.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
But yeah, it's a great road. You can go, you might have heard of Hearst Castle. William Randolph Hearst Castle. That's south of everything. So you couldn't get to that on Highway 1. You had to go all the way inland and around, and then you'd get to it. Mm-hmm. And if you're in L.A. and you're trying to go north, you could go about as far as Hearst Castle and then need to go around to get up north. But it's cool when you can just drive all the way through. So let's see. What else? So the people, I don't know. I was just thinking about the people. I don't know. Let's go a little backwards here. Season 2 is really interesting because they introduced this Meryl Streep character.
Right.
By the way, we should say that we'll spoil everything up until, I guess we'll go up to episode 5 where you are. I won't spoil you for episode 6.
I don't really care. I mean, I'll watch it tonight. You're welcome to talk about anything that's already been aired. You know, I mean, I won't be able to comment on anything I haven't seen, but that's fine with me.
So we could talk a little bit about it. I mean, this is just the order of my notes, I guess, backwards is kind of goofy, but she is coming in like a weaponized torpedo into this whole thing, though.
Yeah, some of this stuff, as a female and watching these females, it's really interesting to me, and I really hate to use this word. I'm hesitant to use it, but a lot of this stuff's triggering, you know? It's, you see these females do this stuff and react this way, and I've said it a million times on these podcasts, you know, as the mother of daughters and everything and all this female interaction. A lot of this stuff is really troublesome. First of all, I did want to say before we do get into the characters, the beginning of this and the ocean and stuff that they're showing reminds me so much of how much I loved The Affair when it first came on. I thought it was edgy, and I just really liked the show. And because The Affair has slid down so much, and it's just like this shell of what was, it almost gives me like this negative feeling toward this show just because of that connection with that, that sink back into the ocean, The Affair thing, and then this thing now that we're seeing with Bonnie and the drowning in the ocean. I don't know. Something about that is really troublesome to me about it, but it reminds me, anyway, how much I really loved The Affair and how much I really enjoy seeing this with the scenery and the music and great music. great, great music in this thing also. And but these women's interactions, this Meryl Streep coming in, like you're saying, like a, you know, like a torpedo or something. I cannot imagine these strong women tolerating that. She is so over the top.
Well, they don't have much choice in a lot of it. I mean, maybe let's put Meryl Streep off to the end because we have some other stuff. Because she really is truly at the end of all this. But it's interesting that you mentioned the affair because I just happened to have the fun experience, Michelle, of your kind offer to visit you and your husband and your family on vacation in Florida. And yeah. You were asking me what, because you haven't been to the California coast, what's the difference between the Atlantic coast and the California coast?
Right.
And this show gives you that perfect answer. If you look at that coast with the waves crashing on the rocks and the steep cliffs and the, you know, Jane running up to the cliff and stopping just in time because she might go over the edge. You don't find that in Florida. There's no elevation change. There's no cliffs, but
right, 5 or 6 feet down to the ocean usually. Yeah,
that is the perfect explanation of the California coast, the Monterey coast, or Monterey Peninsula.
And I actually noticed that, and I thought about what you had said about it and the differences and stuff like that, and how even the little kids on the Atlantic coast are in the water and playing and maybe out 20 feet and stuff, and how different it is out there. I thought about that as I caught up with this season.
So just some basic observations I had about just different things of the show. Madeline and Bonnie are talking at one point in the very first episode. I rewatched the first episode just to give myself a refresher of what was going on. Uh-huh. And they talk about their kids being half sisters, and then Madeline or Bonnie, one of the two, ask if that math is correct. And so think about that, Michelle. Are Madeline and Bonnie's kids really half sisters? Because they're really Madeline's daughter Chloe is from a different man, and Bonnie's daughter, whatever her name is from a different man. So how are they half sisters?
Yeah, they're not. They're really not. Well.
So that's just an unfriendly thing for Madeline to say. Do the math. They're not really half sisters because Bonnie.
The only one that is the older daughter. Abigail.
Yeah.
Abigail is half sisters with both of the sisters.
So Madeline's just being bitchy and saying, well, they're really not. Because usually if somebody says, hey, you're my brother, you're my half brother, you kind of accept that as a, oh yeah, we're brothers from a different mother or whatever.
Right.
You take it in a friendly way.
Right.
She throws it right back in her face.
Right.
So, anyway, I don't know. I thought about that. So, Michelle, the coffee place. Do you like the coffee place they go to?
I really do. It's kind of this little quaint, you know, place and the outside seating and all that. Yes, I like it.
Feel free to counter me with any of these weird observations if you have any that you want to throw in.
Sure.
But I thought, have you ever ordered something in a coffee place like that, non-specific, like, hey, bring me something chocolate and fluffy? Without telling the waiter what you really wanted, to leave it up to him?
Yeah, I actually have done stuff like that. Have you not?
Never.
Really? Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
I'll a say... drink, you know, bring me something. But no, even when I say that, I don't think I've ever done that.
Yeah, I mean, I do that in as many situations as I can like that. You know, I'm like, yeah, surprise me, whatever you like. You know, if I'm not in the mood for something just specific, sure. Because I think that's cool because the people who work there, they know what's good.
What do you think about Chloe calling her mom woman? What are you talking about, woman?
I think that's probably, I've probably heard it a time or two myself. So nothing, nothing too bad about that. She's the cutest little thing ever. Lots of sass and attitude, and I really like her.
Yeah, those kids are growing up really fast, and I'm sure they look different even now from 2017 to 2019.
Yeah, they actually do. Max and Josh, the twins, when you go back and look at them when they first started, they look so much different, like these little kids. And you're right. And I think that's one of the hard things about doing shows like this, is that when you are working with children, they grow up. And you really do. I mean, you are almost on like a time schedule of them, which would put a whole other constraint in what you have to do. I noticed that this time with Stranger Things. We just finished Stranger Things, and I didn't really notice how grown up the kids looked until they flashed back to how they were in the other episodes, and it was startling to me. So, yeah.
So one of the cool things way back in season one, episode one, is Zoe Kravitz, Bonnie saying, "None of us see things as they are, we see things as we are." That's pretty typical, I think, of not just this show, but of life, that you see things through your own prism.
Well, yeah, and I'm kind of wondering, too, as we've seen now, I know I'm jumping way ahead with her, but the kind of mysticism that surrounds her, if that's the right word, with her mother and the, would you call it like, I mean, what would you call that? The stuff that she laid on her nightstand and all that kind of stuff, was it, I don't know, something, and the visions that they have and that kind of stuff, that's another thing that kind of reminded me of the affair.
Yeah, I would call it voodoo nonsense, but I guess some people believe in it.
Well, obviously,
the bone and the feather.
Yeah, that stuff she was putting on the nightstand, and then you see, like, the visions that they're each having that are similar, and we saw Bonnie go into the ocean out there, kind of, we don't know if she really did it or if she just was thinking about doing it, I don't think, but it looked like she really did it because she's really struggling with what happened. And then we saw her mother see her floating, and I don't know, there's just a little bit of that kind of stuff in it that was also reminiscent of some of that other, the affair kind of stuff.
What do you think about Zoe Kravitz's mother in the show versus her mother in real life? Her mother's Lisa Bonet. Lenny Kravitz and Lisa Bonet. Her mother, I think of Lisa Bonet looking just like Zoe Kravitz, like this young, pretty girl, not that older voodoo woman.
You know, exactly. I thought that it was Lisa Bonet at first.
Really?
And
maybe.
Yes.
No, I don't think it is.
No, it's not. You're right. It's Zoe Kravitz. But I really thought it was her. That's how much she looks like her own mother.
No, I thought you meant her mother was Lisa Bonet in the show.
No. I thought Bonnie was Lisa Bonet at first. Because let me tell you why. Lisa Bonet is what? My age, right? Which is also the age of Nicole Kidman and Laura Dern. You could have these older women doing this, but then you have Shailene Woodley, who's like, what, 24, 25? That's another thing that's a little bit interesting about this. The four main characters, you got Celeste and Madeline, Jane and Bonnie. Well, five, and then Renata. So two of them are, like, in their 50s with these young children. And then Reese Witherspoon, Madeline, is in her 40s. And then you've got Zoe and Shailene, who are really young. Bonnie and Jane.
Yeah, I guess that could play out in real life. I mean, you could have a 50-year-old woman with a 6-year-old kid.
Well, sure. But I don't think they're actually supposed to be 50-year-old women in this. Maybe. But
I think they are. Right? Look at their husbands. Their husbands are, there is a wide range of ages for sure. But I think it's just typical of nowadays parenting.
Maybe, but I don't see, in my own personal experience, the 50-year-old moms hang out with the 50-year-old moms, and the 24-year-old moms hang out with the 24-year-old moms. It's the 50-year-old moms are old enough to be the moms of the 24-year-old moms.
That may be true. That, like, Jane would be hard to crack into that friendship circle of the 40 and 50-year-olds.
I mean, I'm just, you know, thinking out loud with it and stuff, but it was interesting to me how they how they combined these different age groups. And I kind of felt like Bonnie, Zoe Kravitz, was meant to be 20 years younger than Reese Witherspoon or whatever, and that's why the husband went after Bonnie after he left Madeline. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, of course it is. That is what that is what it is.
Well, that's what he did, but we don't know why. We don't know if it was an age thing, is what I'm saying.
Well, that's what men do. That's part of this. That's part of the dynamic, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess some men would go after somebody. I don't know.
A lot of men. That's what men do. That's what. That's a statement, I think, that they're making. Not that it's right, but or wrong.
Obviously, right. But that's it is wrong. I mean, I think we can say it's wrong to leave your wife for somebody younger. I mean, that's wrong.
I don't know.
Or older. Wrong. Huh?
I don't know if it's wrong. That's what men desire. I mean, right or wrong, we're not here to judge it. I could see how a woman would think it's wrong, especially if she's the one that got left for a younger person. And if it's just the age, it's only the age, that's one thing. But, that is what men do.
I'm not going to fight with you today.
All right, Michelle. So what about some of the heavy-handedness? Like just rewatching season one, episode one, Celeste has violence all around her. Those kids are playing with guns. Her husband's pretending to be a monster. He's pretending to eat her up. Mommy tastes so good. It's just really foreshadowing what's going on with Celeste and Skarsgård.
Yes.
Do you think that's a little over the top, heavy handed? Those kids shooting guns and hitting each other and
No, not at all. I mean, I know that, like, you know, West Coast culture is different than East Coast culture, maybe even still a lot. But definitely the kids roughhousing and gun playing and all that kind of stuff it doesn't seem heavy handed to me at all from the stuff I've experienced. Particularly with little boys.
Well, I meant in the storytelling, like it's too much of a tip off that's what's going on with Celeste and Skarsgård. I guess, yeah. I should call him his real, what's
Perry.
His name? Perry, yeah.
Perry, yeah.
It's a tip off of what's going to happen between them. I don't know, maybe it's just smart. It's not too bad, I guess, not too over the top. But so, Michelle, they all have these lies. This is a great title for this series, Big Little Lies. They all have lies, if you think about it. So I gave you some, when we talked about doing this, I gave you some things that we might talk about, like who's got the best house and stuff. But I'll hit you with a curveball, Michelle.
Okay.
Who's got the worst lie? Who's suffered the worst? Which of the women has suffered the worst here? You've got Jane with a rape. You've got Donata with this bankruptcy, you got Reese cheating and divorce, maybe in the looming in the future. You got Bonnie maybe with murder, and you've got Celeste with physical abuse. Can you rank these and pick one that might be the worst?
If I had to pick just on the spot, I'm going to say that the physical stuff would probably be the worst. So I'm going to go with Jane as being the most damaged, I guess. I don't know if it's the worst, maybe, but the most damaged from the lies and the secrets that she has. Only because Celeste found some kind of... what would be the word? She found some kind of purpose in it. She found some kind of, I don't even know the word that she found in that relationship with Perry.
Well, what do you mean? Meaning because she's like turned on by it?
That, yes, she got something out of it. And she even misses it, as we find out now. She misses that the maybe because the violence is what she looked at as a passion or something. I don't know. But she got something out of the relationship with Perry, whereas Jane just is so damaged, as we see with her relationship now with Corey.
It's interesting that you say that you picked Jane over... Because I think of those five Celeste and Jane have to be the top two candidates for who's suffered the worst.
Right.
And I would have picked Celeste over Jane.
Tell me why.
Oh, well, because hers was ongoing. And I know, like you said, you're right. She has picked a way to, like, compensate
for the...
Not compensate's not the right word, but maybe transform it into something that she... Maybe that's why she was attracted to him in the first place. But use it or remanufacture it, repurpose it into something that's valuable to her, or at least is not as negative to her.
Right.
But I think her enduring it for over and over and over is worse than Jane having to deal with it once.
I can definitely see that, and I don't disagree with you at all. I can see how you would think that. The only thing about Jane is that Jane has lived this life of isolation because of it and the lack of being able to be touched and that kind of stuff. So Celeste obviously doesn't have those same feelings. It's like she's searching for something, and she's very pitiful in the fact that what she wants and what she thinks is good is not good. But I can definitely see where she might be. I don't know. That's a good point, though.
I think Jane, because think about it as a prison sentence. They each got a prison sentence. Jane's prison sentence is 6 years because her kid is 6 years old. That's when she got raped. And Celeste probably knew Perry for 6 or 7 or 8 years. But Celeste still has the problem, and Jane can resolve the problem. I think Jane can resolve the problem, and I think Celeste, not only because of the problem she has with Meryl Streep torpedoing her, she still thinks that way as far as relationships. I think Celeste will find another dude who's like Perry because that's who she is.
She almost did, right? That other guy that was in there shows her the next morning with like this big mark on her arm. So, yeah, I can definitely see if you're talking about, like, the damage. Although, I don't know, Mike, because Jane can't stand to be touched.
And she's starting to be better, though. She seems to be getting better with these two boyfriends that we see her with. I don't know. Maybe she's not, but she seems like she can be healed easier than Celeste. And now Celeste has this freaking huge problem with the mother-in-law fucking up everything she's got going.
Yeah, that's really... And after she's had her in her home and stuff, although I got to tell you, I'm a little bit worried about Celeste and the driving and the Ambien and the not knowing the guy was in the house when the kids came in.
That's pretty bad stuff. Celeste... Jane will heal, I think. Celeste is... This is her. This is part of her.
I think it's really cool how Celeste relates to Jane. And how they're friends during this, despite this. And how she has even taken part of Perry's estate and given it to Jane. I just think that's incredible. I love that. I love that sisterhood of that.
Can you criticize anything about the fact that Perry crossed both of these women's lives in different points and raped one and married the other? Is that a little too over the top for the story?
I think it's very far-fetched, unless Jane went there for a reason, but I guess that's maybe too much. I don't think Jane has
I think what happened to Jane happened in Santa Cruz, which is farther even north than Monterey. Not too far, but, you know, 100 miles, 80 miles. I guess it's believable. But what was Perry doing up in Santa Cruz?
Well, he traveled, remember, all the time. She's got him on tape where he'd call and tell her goodnight and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but why Santa Cruz? He's a business. We don't really know what his business is, but Santa Cruz is kind of a hippie, almost resort community. Not a business center, not a Los Angeles or a San Francisco. I don't know, maybe driving up to San Francisco, he stopped in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, Michelle.
Or maybe he was seeking out you know, like he did with Jane, who again is much younger than Celeste. So that is interesting.
And they say Perry's younger. Somebody says it in the first episode. They kind of snipe at each other because the parents that are interjected for a couple seconds.
Yeah.
That's interesting how they do that. The odd parent here and there.
Yeah.
But one of the women says, oh, she's much younger than, or he's much younger than her.
Well, he actually is. Like, he is about 10 years younger than her in real life. So, I don't know.
Well, that would put him on a path age-wise with Jane versus Celeste, too.
Well, still 42 and 25 is not the same as 42 and 52. It's still much different.
All right, Michelle, on a lighter note, who's the coolest husband? Or maybe not a lighter note, a heavier note. Who's the worst husband? How do husbands rank in this? You got Adam and Reese. You got Adam, what's his name, and Reese.
His name's Ed.
You got Renata and Gordon. You got Nicole Kidman and Skarsgård. You got Bonnie and Nathan, or Zoe and Nathan. And you got Jane and a couple boyfriends. Who's the best dude in that pack?
I don't know.
Who's the worst?
Well, Perry was probably the worst. But Perry's not there anymore. Right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's not there anymore, and probably obviously he's the worst. But, I mean, Big Little Lies, they're all holding these little lies that happen to them that... Dude, it's like you get married, you get a box along with the person you get a box of stuff, and in that box is all kinds of stuff that person's gonna be and have and do to you and do to themselves and everyone around. You get a bunch of problems with that person and good things, obviously, too. But isn't it funny how in life everybody has these freaking problems? You look at these perfect lifestyles on the Monterey Peninsula with all this money and beautiful mansions, and they have the same freaking problems as everyone else.
Well, yeah, money has nothing to do with it. Might even complicate a lot of things. But I don't know, like Ed, Reese's husband, Madeline's husband, I don't like him. I know a lot of people like him, but I don't.
He's a bit of a pussy.
That's not the exact word I would have used, but I just feel like he's milquetoast, right? I mean, he's just bland and kind of blah. And seeing her and their situation, I don't know. It's really complicated because she is still thinking back on that affair, and she had passion with that affair, and she has nothing with Ed. There's no, I mean, no passion. You can see them working at stuff, but it's not the same as that passion. That
you're thinking of the affair with the play guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Reese still has passion for her ex-husband, too, Nathan. For some reason, he left her, I think.
Yeah, she said he did.
And so she's still hung up about that. And
I don't think that she likes him. I'm not feeling anything toward him. Of course, she has that connection. They have the daughter.
But she's hung up on him. She may not desire him anymore, but she's hung up on the reasons why he left her.
Okay. Yeah, I can go along with that.
But, yeah, Adam, what's his name in real life?
Adam Scott.
Adam Scott is a pussy. He's just like a fallback position for Reese.
He's kind of moody, and he's just bland, and he really doesn't have anything to say or add, or I don't know.
I mean, Nathan was probably a rogue. He went for a younger woman, too, with Bonnie. So he's probably the rogue. You know, he's like a landscaper. That's the other thing. I tried to figure out what all these guys do for a living. I can't figure out what Ed does. I think he's some sort of a website builder or something. He's into computers.
Right.
He has a cool... One thing I like about their house, he has that cool stand-up desk with the dual computers on it. Right in the kitchen, right in the open area there.
Right.
I like that. But he obviously is a safety valve for Reese. For some reason, he's safe and calm and quiet, and she's probably using that as a refuge from all the other crap she's either created and brought upon herself or other guys have brought upon her. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like he's the answer for her.
Well, I mean, but really somebody shouldn't be an answer for somebody. But I totally get what you're saying. She does not have the passion for him that she wants in her life. And I think he was right in that little speech he gave her after he found out about the affair. He was the safe option, and he had reconciled himself to that because of his feelings toward her. But he couldn't be her safe option if then she was going to go rogue on him. And I think that's fair.
So we talked about Perry and what's her name, Celeste. What about Renata and Gordon? Gordon seems to be some sort of commodities trader, and she is some sort of real estate. Maybe not real.
She's an attorney, isn't she? Like a real estate attorney or something.
Celeste is an attorney. Renata is some sort of businesswoman. She's got Businesswoman of the Year on the magazine cover and stuff. I don't think she's an attorney. She does some deals with people, business deals of some sort. And Gordon is some sort of trader, like stock or commodities trader.
Right.
He risked everything on some trades and got into trouble with it. But what do you think about them?
Well, I don't think they've shown us a whole lot about them and their marriage until just the last couple of episodes. Not that I've seen. She's obviously a steamroller, and she just kind of bulldozes her way through any and everything. She's not somebody. She reminds me of like my little dog who like wants to be loved, but he just can't calm down enough to accept anybody. He's so manic and so hyper, and that's what she kind of reminds me of. She's so focused on success and everything she wants and appearances, and she's just a steamroller. She makes something happens and her mind's made up and she just dozes her way toward it. So
yeah, she snipes at Jane pretty badly in the beginning when she thinks her daughter's getting picked on by her son, but then she actually becomes a pretty good friend to Jane. So you're right, she kind of bites before she thinks and then becomes kind of a true blue friend.
Right. And like with her husband Nathan, I don't think they've shown us much about him at all until recently, like the last couple episodes. And even then, he doesn't seem like a bad guy to
her
me.
Her husband's Gordon. Nathan's Bonnie's husband.
Sorry. Yes, I meant Gordon.
I think I could put them together because Gordon seems like a kind of risk taker, no nonsense businessman, risking it all in those commodities. Like, I think I could see how they got attracted to one another.
Well, sure. And he is laid back enough that he can tolerate a woman with that kind of energy, it seems like. I mean, he's, you know, playing with his train set or whatever. He's really into that kind of thing and can just let her handle the stuff that she's going to have her hand in, whether he likes it or not.
So, Michelle, Big Little Lies, he has a big little lie that you may not know about yet if you're on episode 5. I don't remember if it was episode 5 or 6 because it just happened.
Okay.
And so if you don't mind the spoiler,
I'll tell people.
But they have to get rid of all their expenses because they're going through the bankruptcies. They have to get rid of their au pair, their maid or whatever.
Okay, I didn't
and
know that.
And he's had an affair with the au pair. And the au pair's in bankruptcy court saying, you owe me $175,000 for services rendered.
Oh, no. No, I liked him, except for, like, his, I don't know what, white-collar crime. I liked him. Jeez. Okay.
So that's that. So what about Bonnie and Nathan? Nathan seems to be, I'm trying to figure out his attraction to women's attraction to him, especially Reese Witherspoon having this crush still on him or this thing for him. And Bonnie, what does Bonnie see in this guy? He's like a landscaper. He's kind of a dude, I guess. He's kind of a good-looking guy.
But he's good-looking. He's very masculine. Me as a female, you know, just
James Tupper. He's pretty calm in the face of adversity.
Not really. Not really. He's really a troublemaker. He starts trouble with Ed. He is a fighter, yeah. He wants to always
fight Ed. That's true.
Yeah, but he's just a guy's guy, it seems like. You know, he's just one of these, somebody that would be fun. I think he's fun. I haven't seen a lot about him and Bonnie, except since Bonnie's been sad in this season too, and he seems really concerned.
That's what I mean about him being a kind of a down-to-earth.
And I like that about him. The fact that he called her mom, I thought was implausible. I don't see that happening. Maybe. I don't know.
What do you mean he called her mom?
Well, Nathan's the one who called Bonnie's mom because he felt like something was going on in their marriage and she wasn't opening up to him and she'd shut off. So he called her mom to come stay with him because he wanted some help with her because she had like shut herself off from him. And of course, we know why. So he
phoned her mom, you mean? I thought you meant like he called her with the title of mom.
Oh, sorry. No, he telephoned her mother. He got her mother to come stay with them. And I thought that was kind of implausible that he would do that because I don't see how that would help any situation to have these extra people in the house when somebody's struggling with something.
Sure isn't helping Mackenzie very much.
But it's nice that he cares about her so much.
What about Jane and her boyfriends? She first has this coffee shop guy that they think is gay, and he turns out just to be a regular and kind of a nice guy. And then the Bay Area Aquarium guy, the pretty boy.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the guys are like, I don't know. They're not any, I don't see it, but go Jane. You know,
there's another transition at the end of season two between episodes 5 and 6. Again, I'm not sure if you've noticed it yet because I can't remember which episode it was in. But Jane starts turning against the pretty boy aquarium guy. Like, you're around too much. Give me some space. He's surfing with her son and he's coming over when she doesn't expect. And it looks like she's turning cool on him.
Okay, no, I haven't seen that. The last I saw was they were at the beach, and he was surfing, teaching all the kids to surf. That was the last I saw of him.
Yeah, he goes from being perfect to everyone, even Celeste's kids. He's, like, carrying all the kids, and they're all thinking, oh, what a great man to have. But she's cooling on him in the last couple episodes.
Did they ever have sex? Did they ever...
I don't remember.
Yeah, because they hadn't last I had seen. At the end of episode 5, they hadn't. And she was trying to get close to him, and she ended up breaking down. So
that was another interesting thing about Jane. The only guy she ever had sex with was Perry.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying she was so damaged by her encounter with this guy that she can't even be touched.
Right.
And lack of touch for a person is bad. It's devastating.
All right, Michelle, who's got the best house? You got Bonnie in the hippie house. You got Jane in an apartment. Those are probably two lower on the scale. Although some people really like Bonnie's house. You got the Reese house, the open kitchen, Adam Scott open computers. That's really cool. I like that house. And then you got Renata and Celeste. They're kind of equal open to the sea mansion houses. It's actually hard to delineate Renata's and Celeste's house.
Has no furniture in it. That's how you can delineate. Yeah. Probably Jane's. I like Jane's like boho kind of style, if that's what you'd call it. And it's just small and homey and cozy. A lot of people love the big houses. And of course, if you're talking about which is more glamorous or beautiful or anything, you're right. It's going to be between Celeste and Renata, probably. But Jane has the place that feels like home. Maybe yeah. Madeline, but
Jane has the least the least expensive. It's an apartment. It's sure. just a, it's that it, you know, and then equal to that was probably like Celeste when she had to find that apartment. She kind of found an apartment like Jane's apartment.
Right.
But that was one of the scariest moments in this show is when Perry found out that Celeste had the apartment.
Oh, I know.
Right yeah. before the Elvis night. I think I would say Best House goes to Ed and Reese.
Madeline, yeah. I can see that. It's but it's very nice. I mean, it's upscale. It's not on the beach, though, right, as I recall, like Celeste's and Renata's are.
We see much more of the outside of Renata and Celeste than anyone else's because they have such great seascapes, landscapes, whatever, like their pools right on the edge of the coast and stuff.
Right.
I don't really remember where Ed and Madeline's house is relationship-wise to the beach.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all near the beach. It's a modern, it's a peninsula, so you can't be very far. But I like the inside of their house, which yeah. is cool. I don't really care for what's his name's toy room with the trains. I think it's pretty stupid.
Well, there's some adult guys that have that kind of stuff. They really are into. I mean, it's their hobby, like video games or whatever is other guys.
Well, I think that's stupid too.
Okay.
I mean, he sits in there drinking scotch and playing with his trains.
I don't think he's playing with them, right? I mean, maybe. I guess you'd call it that. But they just like they build that kind of stuff. They build the landscaping and that kind of stuff.
Well, he's playing with the train driving around the track. So what else would okay. you call it?
I'm trying to give the guy the benefit of the doubt here.
He's a I don't know. I guess you can't criticize it. A lot of people have hobbies, but it seems like a childish kind of hobby. Like video games seem to me to be a kind of a childish kind of hobby when you're 40, north of 40. All right, Michelle, so what's next? We started with Meryl Streep. Let's end with her. She comes in like hot torpedo damage, and there's trouble on the horizon here. And the end of number 5 leaves you really worried. The beginning of number 6 in season 2 makes you more worried, but the end of number 6 makes you hopeful. I mean, clearly nobody hopes she gets custody of these kids. So she's a total antagonist here. Nobody's rooting for Meryl Streep here.
Well, no. I mean, she's got nobody in her life. The woman has literally lost or ran off every person in her life. She doesn't even, I mean, she's old enough to be Perry's mom, so she's going to have to be in her 60s. And she doesn't even have any connection to where she lives enough to keep her there at that age without a husband or anything. So she is gung-ho to move to be around Celeste and the boys, and of course now Jane and Ziggy, without anything to even hold her back. And then when she gets there, she destroys every relationship she could have with these women. I mean, she could do her little sleuth thing that she's trying to do to find out what happened to Perry without being so alienating.
There's a great podcast, Michelle, called Still Watching. They had, like, Still Watching Game of Thrones, Still Watching Big Little Lies. And they have, I like that podcast, so check it out if you want. But they talk about Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep's real name is Mary Louise whatever. And Meryl's character is Mary Louise in this show. So they wrote this character for Meryl Streep before they actually had her commit to being in the role.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And they were throwing all their, you know, eggs into one basket, but they got her to do it. She's perfect for this role as Mary Louise.
Well, she's horrible, right? She's horrible, and they've really aged her for the, not aged so much, but frumped her up. She's very
frumpy. She is 65, though, or 6 in real life.
Yeah, but she doesn't look like that in real life.
Well, I mean, she's
frumped up. Or she didn't look like that, yeah.
For sure. Her hair is goofy in this, but But man, do you think this could ever really happen? I mean, do we really need to fear for Nicole Kidman that she's going to lose her kids here?
I think anytime you get the court systems involved in any kind of situation like that, it's a very dangerous and unpredictable situation. So, yeah. And it's just like I said about Celeste. Celeste wrecked her car and didn't remember getting in it. Celeste was with that guy and her kids came in. She didn't even think that he, I mean, she'd forgotten he was there. I don't know what do you think they're trying to show us with her? Does she have a drug problem?
I think she has a life problem. She's got this compulsion to be with men that are physical and abusive with her.
Absolutely. And obviously.
She forgives them a bunch of times. That's not a good thing. And she's got abuse problems with drugs and alcohol or whatever, a compulsive problem. She can't stop.
And dangerous problems because she wrecked a car. And because she had the guy in there and she forgot he was there, that's dangerous. That's scary where the kids are concerned.
Well, that happens to me all the time.
Oh.
So, Michelle, there was another cool scene where her psychologist or therapist, who is another really cool character in the show, I really like this therapist woman, she tries to get Celeste to leave her husband and get the apartment, actually successfully gets her to take those steps. But she plays out in court. She play acts in court, like to make Celeste realize what would happen if she doesn't leave. Like okay. What the attorney, remember she play acts the attorney. Do you remember that scene? It's like somewhere in season two, I think. The therapist play acts what the attorney will be questioning her on the stand as in real court, like what will happen to her because she's, you know, you never went to the police. Why are you saying something's wrong now? Like she play acts that with her in the therapist's office.
Okay.
Well, that comes to play in reality in episode 6 of season 2.
Okay, so episode 6, we're in court.
Yeah.
Because the court thing is the problem here. Because when we boil it all down, when we get rid of all of these little things, the big thing, the big little lie is what happened with Perry.
Right.
And what that police officer, detective, whoever she is trying to figure out.
Right.
I don't understand why they didn't just tell what happened with Perry to begin
I know. And I don't understand that. True. That's one thing. But also number two, just hold your line. All 5 of you say the same story. Nobody can counter that story if they all stick to it. The only thing that can ruin it is people like Bonnie freaking out like, oh, I can't have this lie hanging over the personal weakness. But if they all commit to the lie, nobody could crack that wall of 5 giving the same story. Nobody could counter that. There's no video of it. You know, it's like fear. Fear is the only thing that can crack that fake story.
And I know it's fake, but it's almost not even fake. I mean, he didn't trip and fall, but what Bonnie did to him, pushing him, was not it's not an overreaction.
Out of proportion.
Right.
You could say, yeah, he was hurting my friend, so I pushed him away, and then he tripped down the stairs. They could have said that, but they didn't. And so they always say it's not the crime, it's the lie about the crime. Look at Martha Stewart, right? She could have just said, yeah, I shouldn't have traded those stocks. You're right. But it's the lying to the police and all that stuff after. And now gotten so deep in that it is a big deal.
Well, that's even what they were saying, is that they're going to try to get him on perjury now, not on the actual crime, but on perjury. That's why they wanted him to go to court and why they think that they're pushing Mary Louise to do this.
Right. The problem that we really have, and the interesting thing about this therapist, is the therapist portrays what would happen to court to Celeste if you don't to take steps to protect yourself. And right. that comes to be. It comes to play in reality. The lawyer rips Celeste up and down and left and right for like 3/4 of episode 6. It's almost all courtroom. And she's weak. She's like, oh, yeah, I guess I was driving on Ambien and I did wreck my car. And I have been physical with the boys and I have hit other people and I did hit Perry. And she had to admit all these bad things that make her look terrible. But then episode 6 ends with Celeste standing up. The judge is about to make a ruling and Celeste stops the judge and says, wait, I want to call a witness. And she wants to be her own lawyer. And it makes her look like she's about to pull this powerful ace out of her sleeve to stand up as a lawyer and protect herself.
Yeah.
Because she's got that milquetoast lawyer who's not really doing much to save her and just kind of giving her the advice. Yeah, just admit to it. You'll take a lesser sentence.
Oh, I know. I know she said, here, just give your kids to her on the weekends by court order. No way. Okay. This woman raised Perry. And I mean, I don't know if we can blame her for Perry, but certainly seeing her dysfunction, it wouldn't be too far of a stretch to do that. And if I were Celeste, would I want my children to be unsupervised with or maybe even supervised, depending, with this woman who raised Perry to be the kind of person he was? Celeste has had to come to terms with the fact of his abuse. He was going to likely kill her that night. I mean, he was kicking her. You can't do that to this teeny little female or anybody for that matter, but certainly somebody, the difference in them was anyway. And she raised him. Mary Louise raised him. And I mean, you know, you can't blame everything on the moms. I mean, I'm a mom. I certainly don't want things blamed on me, but they show her being so dysfunctional that how could you let your little boys go be with her? How could you not fight everything about that?
Yeah, the problem with her legally in court is they don't peel enough of the layers back on Perry to make him look as bad as he really was in court. Like, we know how bad he was, but in court, it just looks like, I mean, he's bad, but it doesn't look as bad as it really was. So you can't really make the argument to the court that you raised this monster and now you want to raise my grandkids? No way. I mean, that wouldn't hold. They make it look like Celeste is just a bad mom in episode 6.
They don't bring up Jane?
I think they do, yeah. I think they do. I don't remember, though.
But, because maybe that's who Celeste is going to call as a witness.
I mean, the worst thing they do is they take, if even not giving the kids to Mary Louise, is they give the kids to some protective service or something just because they make Celeste look so bad. But
right.
Anyway, it looks like Celeste is going to stand up and fight for herself, and there's kind of a hopeful note at the end of episode 6.
Well, I hope so. The thing about Meryl Streep that makes her so distasteful is that she's like this wolf in sheep's clothing. She comes with kindness and sympathy and help at first, and then she is the snake that'll bite you as soon as you let your guard down, or yeah. Even before you do. She's
I think
horrible.
This show is. I was about to say when we were talking about the affair that if we had done a podcast on this show and every episode we went over every episode that we would probably start to snipe and pick apart like in the affair like the politics of the writers.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. I think this show is written much more intelligently than the affair. And Meryl Streep is written. She's a horrible person in this character role, but she's a really intelligently written character.
I agree. Although I think The Affair started off that way, and we're only into season 2. So I agree so far, but...
Yeah, they also leave, this show, when it started, like all shows do, they never know how long they're going to go, and you could have essentially ended it at season 1. With Big Little Lies, but at the end of season 2 here, they leave a lot open for a season 3 and beyond, I think.
Which is interesting, because, you know, Big Little Lies is a book.
Yeah.
So.
They usually all are good stories. But, yeah, David E. Kelly is the writer. He's a great television writer. You got to start giving him credit, almost like he took the original nugget of an idea and fleshed it out into what we have now with season two. But I could see a season three. I mean, all the stuff with, like, now Renata's husband being kind of a philanderer and who knows.
Well, yeah, and where's that going to go anyway? They're going to have to show her in some lesser situation because that's her Achilles heel. So they'll have to show that since they brought it up. It's already bad enough that she doesn't have furniture or anything, but
that's horrible. Another interesting development is Ed is being flirted upon by the play guy's wife. She's trying to get him to sleep with her.
Right. And what's going on with Bonnie being so touchy-feely with Ed, knowing what's going on?
We don't learn the end of the fate of Bonnie, but I could see Bonnie walking into the ocean and killing herself. I could see Bonnie ending her own life.
I don't know. I think if she gets much more touchy-feely with Madeline's husband, there's going to be a problem, because we have already noted that her first husband, Madeline's first husband, went with Bonnie. And now Bonnie's like all over, or not all over, but certainly different with Ed than she should be.
Yeah, but Ed's now got this theater dude's wife hitting on him. He's got to pick between the theater dude's wife and Bonnie. Ed's all of a sudden become a hot commodity. Milquetoast Ed.
Is Ed going to do that, do you think?
I think he's going to do the theater guy's wife.
You think?
Yep. I don't know about Bonnie. I think Bonnie's going to off herself. Well, Michelle, on that note, on those good times.
On that happy note.
We're at about an hour here, so I guess the next thing we'll probably do is our August the Affair. Unless you have a fascinating idea to do a podcast in between.
If something comes up, I'll certainly let you know. But so far, my fascinating ideas are few and far between.
How's your YouTube channel doing? You had 1,000 subscribers yet?
No, it's at close to well over 8.
Yeah, what is it? What's the channel?
Michelle from TN.
Michelle from TN, and you talk like beauty tips and.
Not beauty tips, really. It's really just about aging as a female and today's society, that kind of thing.
Yep. So check out Michelle from TN on YouTube and get her podcast, get her subscription numbers up. You're at like 850, so don't poo-poo 1,000. You're right on the doorstep.
I really like doing the YouTube channel. It's a whole lot more interactive than we're able to be with the podcast, which is sad to me. I really wish that we could interact more. I'm not real sure how we could do that. I know from time to time we've done it through Twitter with people, and we've made some friends and some people that we've kept in contact with over the years, and I really like that. But I think with the YouTube channel, it's a whole lot easier to be interactive and back and forth with people. It's more community feel, and I wish there was some way we could do that with these podcasts.
All right, Michelle, leave me with the prediction. What's going to happen with Celeste's kids?
I'm afraid that... Okay, I'll just go out on a limb. I'll just do a wild prediction and say that they decide not to give them to Mary Louise, and so, but they want Celeste to have some kind of tests or something, want her to do something different. So maybe Jane keeps them.
Oh, that's interesting. I predict after where I was, where you are, and especially in the beginning of episode 6, like I said, I would have projected she loses those kids. But now I project she gets the kids, gets some sort of court-ordered treatment, and she's going to be fine. But we have these other mysteries like Ed and his affairs and everybody else and their little affair problems.
Did they have Madeline and Jane and Bonnie and all them on the stand in episode 6?
Not that I remember. They're in the courtroom watching.
Yeah, I'm afraid that this really doesn't have a whole lot to do with the kids, and that they just wanted to get them up there to figure out
what went on that night. That's a great point, huh? I didn't even ask about the murder. Like, do they get away with the murder or whatever, pushing? You don't want to call it a murder. Legally, it probably is a murder. But I would guess Bonnie does something to herself, and then she gets blamed for the murder, and that clears itself because she's not around anymore. I would guess that she's not around.
Yeah, but I mean, even if that happened, they've still lied. They'll still have the perjury.
They'll make something to smooth that over. Because they can't all go to jail, then there's no room for anything else to happen.
Well, I hate to sacrifice Bonnie to this, but the fact is, I mean, I really hate for anybody to get in trouble for getting Perry off of Celeste. And that's really all that happened.
If they have to
turn in on other people, too.
If they have to sacrifice one of the five, though, Bonnie would be my first pick. I like the other four. They're more interesting than Bonnie.
I think they're more central, yeah, to the story than Bonnie. Bonnie's interesting, but okay, something that really interested me with Bonnie, and let me get your take on this real quick, but she was teaching that class, that yoga class. She has like this yoga studio, and they're singing in there. She has them singing, and somebody came in, I don't remember who it was, her dad maybe, and she's talking to him, and he's like, what's going on in there? And she's like, it's a sleep apnea thing. And her dad's like, what? Or whoever the guy was. And she goes, look, it's a cash cow. They diagnose everybody with this. That's that. And it took her out of that kind of yogi, peace, loving, dwelling person into this
entrepreneur. Kind of, yeah, yes. She's a businesswoman. Yeah, I mean, that's her little, I guess, yeah, it's the foofiness veil was pulled away, and she's like, oh, yeah, I just do this as an extra income. And I thought about that at the time. Was that in the middle of the night sometime? Because how do you do a sleep apnea class at 2 in the afternoon?
I don't think so. I mean, why would you sleep apnea in the middle of the night? I mean, you know, I don't know, and I don't have any idea what a song could have anything to do with it, but it was just, I don't know, but I felt like that kind of pull. It was either she was trying to relate, and that's really not how she felt as far as the cash count. She just didn't want to go into this is helpful to people or whatever. Or,
no, she really is.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, yeah, you caught me. I got this one going, but it pulls in a lot of money. This show is great, man. It's too bad we didn't podcast it from the beginning because it would have been really rich for material for us.
Well, it's never too late, Mike.
Yeah, it is too late.
Because people are still going. It's not too late. People are still going back and watching it.
There aren't that many other good podcasts about it. That one still watching is really good. You should check it out. But I don't know of too many others. So, and it's a good show.
It's a really good show. And, I mean, the cast of characters and stuff that they have is impressive.
And the music and the whole tuned into, like, real reality and stuff.
Yes.
And David E. Kelly is a great writer, so
it's really good.
Michelle, let's leave it at that. We're way over an hour now, an hour and 10 minutes, so we'll talk again sometime soon.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.